Mafia Podcast.
Greetings, Goombas, new listeners, old listeners, whatever you wish to call yourselves this time around. I have a special guest Skyping in right now. You've seen me wear his t-shirts. You've seen me promote his shows on Twitter and Facebook and so forth and so on. I have with me the one, the only, Reverend J. Leal.
And I just...
I hope I
burned my tongue. Burned my tongue. I'm sorry.
No, it was perfect timing, too. I give you the introduction, all of a sudden I hear, nice.
That was a strong intro. That was a great intro. Your intros make mine sound horrible.
Hey, you got to start big. Be big. And what better way to try to bring in a host or co-host is almost like WWE style, you know?
Absolutely.
But, kind of speaking of which, did you catch any of the CM Punk's I want to say WWE UFC debut?
No. Yeah. I did, and man, like my heart sank for the man. He really showed like this was such a big deal to him. Just he really put his whole. I don't know. I might be over exaggerating that. I see the passion behind him. I feel like he horribly rushed this whole thing. But I can see the passion in the man, and it kind of hurt my soul just how short-lived that dream debut was.
Yeah, I saw the fight on YouTube today, and it looked like a 8th grader beating up a 4th grader. But I have nothing against CM Punk, but like I said, it seemed like an 8th grader beating up a 4th grader.
Oh my God, yeah, right?
From what I heard, a lot of the tweets that were going out, they were supportive of, there were basically people from the WWE and other wrestlers, both retired and so forth, congratulating him for at least making it that far, you know, stepping into the ring, and at least trying, but I think it was the UFC. I want to say it was one of the UFC owners said he tried his best and they had a lot of respect. But if he wants to fight again, it's not going to be with the UFC. I could understand that, but it's who knows. Some people may want to say might go to. Back to the WWE in this, but I doubt that because there still might still be animosity between him and Vince McMahon for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But it's stupid. I won't say it's stupid, but if he wants to train better, because in all this he is a trained, for the listeners at home, he is a trained wrestler. For those who don't know about professional wrestling like the WWE is that the fighters tend to protect their opponent so they don't get hurt too bad. And a lot of fans who saw CM Punk go into the UFC, they kind of worried that he'd have that remnants of trying to protect his opponent in this, that he's not trying to hurt his opponent the way Ronda Rousey might try to hurt her opponent, or another Iceman might try to hurt his opponent, and so forth and so on. So there was that logic behind certain things.
Yeah,
so
isn't that kind of what Ultimate Fighting is about?
Hurting your opponent?
Kinda. It's Ultimate Fighting. It's fighting. It's not Ultimate Tickle Fest. Like I don't know. If you're not going in intending to cause bodily harm in the most efficient way, the other guy is. And it's just not a great idea to go in half-assed. If that's part of his reasoning for what had happened, I can't believe it is, because I think he was just, in 2 years, you cannot study up enough on the just array of fighting styles that exist in the UFC, it's not possible. Like, sure, you can have a base understanding of what can come at you, but to really be prepared at anything that can come at you takes much longer than 2 years. And all the wrestling training in the world is not going to prepare you for somebody who's, you know, this. You guys aren't working together on a show. You're working as, like, just, it's every man for himself, and you want to win. Like that, and the way you win is by just your opponent not being able to stand anymore, essentially.
Also, the best way to describe this would be like you or I going up against Tyson in his prime. It as much as we would be excited to be in that ring and fighting Tyson in his prime,
yeah,
we're not going to win. As much as we want to win, as much as the excitement is being in that ring, we're not going to win whatsoever.
Mike Tyson now would rip me in half.
even now, yeah, same here. But
in 80 years, he'd still probably kick my ass.
I'd probably the same thing if I stepped in the ring with Muhammad Ali's daughter. You know, she'd probably still knock me on my ass.
Scary one.
But it's that aspect. He wanted to do this. I'll give him that. He wanted to do this. He wanted to give it a shot. It took him 2 years to do it, plus a back surgery, plus trying to get to weight. I didn't expect him to win this. I would have put money on the other guy, as much as a CM Punk fan as I was. He wasn't going to win this. No way in hell.
I mean, I knew he wasn't going to win. I didn't quite understand just how quickly he wasn't going to win. But I mean, like, so before even seeing the fight, because I hunted it down on YouTube maybe the night after it happened, and everything had a thumbnail of just him at the end of the fight with, like, half his ear missing and being ripped off his head and, like, that same eye on that side just pretty, like, I don't know. That's going to be a really black eye.
Yeah, he went. I probably saw the same fight you did. It lasted roughly, I want to say, 3 minutes and 30 seconds total. Wasn't a instant win, but he just got his ass handed to him.
He broke free a couple times, and that was
I will say that he tried. He didn't. Like I said, it wasn't like a Tyson, old school Tyson fight where it was over in 15 seconds. He actually gave it his shot, and he tried his damnedest before tapping out. But like I said, it was like an eighth grader going up against a fourth grader. You know, his punches that he tried seemed not, I don't want to say pulled, seemed just weak when compared to the person he was up against.
Well, you got to think too, like he's lived his entire career not actually hitting somebody. So even knowing that that's what you're supposed to do, I think there's still a degree of, I don't know, maybe it's human nature. You don't want to inflict some sort of physical harm on anybody. You let go of a lot when you're ultimately just going to hit somebody. And I don't know if he was really, because he hadn't had any. This was his first fight ever. And then there was a handful of secret fights that are allegedly going around that happened to prepare for this one. Like, his trainer and everything, he set up these, like, after hours kind of, all right, you know, give it a shot. And he didn't win any of those. And I promise you, they weren't going after him as aggressively as this kid was.
Yeah, probably, if they were anything, they were probably either sparring fights or tryouts, and if anything, that's why the UFC owner, which who I think it was, said what he said. He could fight whomever he wishes in the MMA world, just not, it's not going to be with the UFC. So, yeah. If he still wants to continue with the MMA thing, let this be kind of a lesson to him that he has to get away from that mentality of, I can't, if the wrestlers probably do hit each other, but they're more pulled or more, I don't want to say friendly, but they're pulled a little bit. It's me, it would be like the me equivalently of hitting your arm and you just going, ow.
Yeah, it's not meant to inflict damage. It's theatrics, really. I mean, you know, everyone knows wrestling's not real. It's no surprise, but they're still taking a physical toll and a physical risk. They're actually hitting each other, but they're not hitting each other with the intent of making sure the other one doesn't get up.
Right, and he probably still has a little bit of that mentality. That's why you see in the videos that this, again, it's not directed at you, it's directed towards the listeners, that his, when you see the video, his hits, his fists hit, but it looks like he's just touching his opponent, not literally wailing. I'm not a UFC fan. I'm not an MMA fan. It's the environment that I'm in, meaning that if I went to Buffalo Wild Wings or a local bar during an MMA or UFC fight, it's populated by these frat boy douchebag looking type people. I'm not saying they're frat boy douchebags, but they got the tap out shirts, they got the hats backwards, they're fist pounding them. They don't look like what you and I would normally be walking to a bar, like, hey, let's go to a bar and check out a UFC fight.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me not want to be there because they're not the regular Joe fans that want you to welcome you into that type of environment. And if you stepped in there, it's like, hey, I'm here to kind of take in the MMA scene and the UFC fight. And it's that atmosphere of, well, if you're not a fan already, we don't want you in here. And that's kind of the air I get. But I have seen a few MMA fights, but when you see those two fighters get together, they're wailing on each other like there's no tomorrow. They really want to take the other person out, and it's almost like watching a street brawl. I mean this the wrong way. I want to kill you before you kill me, in a way.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's almost that way, but it makes it interesting to watch. So it's finding that proper environment to watch it and enjoy it. But watching CM Punk, he didn't seem like he was into it, but he wasn't really into it.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens in the near future. I'll probably keep an eye on it. And I find it
– took guts.
Thinking about – Go ahead.
Oh, no, it took guts. Like, I'll never – you can't take that away from him. He made a decision. He followed through. I think he tapped out smart because, you know, he understood when he was overwhelmed and he wasn't trying to play tough guy. You know, he was like,
right.
I'm done. And I don't – you know, it wasn't like a wimpy move by any means at all. I mean, if he stayed in – I think it would have been pretty damning for everyone involved to let him take a punishment like that when, you know, obviously it's his finish. It was finished really when he hit the ground. I mean, he was still able to break some holds and, you know, whatnot, but ultimately that, you know, homeboy was on like a fucking spider monkey and
yeah.
like smashing his head into the chain link. Oh my God. That was...
That's the thing. If it lasted more than one round, it would have been too long, too much.
Would have been irresponsible.
Right. It lasted just long enough. I guess he tried to make it last as long as he did. That way, if it was too short, it didn't seem like he pushed out and tapped out two ways too soon. If he lasted closer to the end of the round, it would have made it seem like still it was fake, but he was pushing it too far. But it was right in that middle zone, which made it just right and a smart move. Like, yeah. All right, I can't do it. If I can't stretch it out more than this round. I can't stretch it out this round that much. He's winning. You know what? I'm tapping out. I'm going to take it as a loss, but a win as a loss.
Mm-hmm.
If you could understand that I made it to the ring, I made it this far, I proved everybody that said I would not make it this far, that I made it this far. even though I lost, I still made it this far.
Yeah.
If exactly. I go, make it another fight, then I make it another fight. This is, hey, who knows? Who knows? So, kind of move on for that from this a little bit. Having you on, I want to talk about. I'm not knocking my co-host in this, but me and my co-host don't tend to read. You're more of a comic guy and a DC fanboy, and I mean that in the utmost respect.
Yeah.
Before we continue, I made it this about 10 minutes in. I haven't properly let you promote your stuff yet. Let me let you do that right now. Kind of explain who you are, what you do. So I'll give you that. So to give you people your credentials.
What I do? Oh man.
Yeah. What do you do?
What do I do? I don't know what I do. I make stuff.
Well, you run the Skeleton Crew brand.
Yeah, I've branded it. Skeleton Crew brand. It's my outlet to be a narcissist without any judgment. But I probably get judged a lot. I like to do video. I went to film school. So, I mean, I try to utilize that knowledge in piece of paper that says I know how to do stuff as much as possible. I like to take pictures. I make graphic design stuff that I put on t-shirts. That kind of just came about because one day I decided I needed a new wardrobe and I couldn't find anything at all that really appealed to me in any way. Nothing. So I figured, like, why the hell not? There's a process to doing this. Shirts are made somehow. So I was like, I can do this. Why the hell not? Why don't I only wear things I want to wear? And by the best way to accomplish that is just starting your own, just kind of, I don't want to say clothing line because I don't make clothing. I just make designs and slap them on shirts or hoodies to come and just other random nonsense that I have in the works. But yeah, so that kind of happened, and then people seem to enjoy these designs I made. So
you have at least one weirdo in West Virginia that buys your stuff. So
yeah, dude, I like that guy. I like the guy a lot. But what else? Podcasting. I got into podcasting, and now I can't stop doing that. And it's to a point now where it's probably at a really unhealthy level that I started talking to myself. Because when you podcast alone, and I've been doing a lot of solo episodes, there's a psychosis that goes into that because you're really just sitting alone talking to yourself. And it's kind of – it's troubling, really, when you think about it.
In one of the Facebook groups I'm on, they say podcasters have to be a tad bit narcissistic because they have to promote their stuff.
Oh, completely narcissistic. So, yeah, like, if you aren't completely self-involved, podcasting is not for you.
Right. But Jay has said, he does podcasting. He has several. One is Biff Bam Bort. Another one is Sarlacc Pit. You could easily find them all under the Geek Core Podcasting. You can find them on his website, which is – I'll link it in the description as well, Jay. You can find all his podcasts by searching Skeleton Crew or Geek Core on iTunes. Also, I think Google Play Music. Mm-hmm. Plus, you could find all his regular – the whole line of podcasts on his main website, which is SkeletonCrewBrand.com. And to let you, the listeners, know, Crew is spelled C-R-U-E.
Mm-hmm. The trashy way, the motley way.
To explain to the listeners, I kind of know the history behind that spelling. Could you tell the listeners why spelling it C-R-U-E instead of the traditional C-R-E-W-A. Is there a reason behind that, or you just want it to be a little bit unique?
For me, I just really like Motley Crue. so I stole it from them. It's kind of trivia. So with Skeleton Crew, everything I do like, it's just really me paying tribute to all the things that I feel make me me. So if I'm a fanboy about something, if I'm geeking hard about something, I'm going to make a product that reflects that genre, that style, that imagery, that, I mean, look at the Skeleton Crew skull, like, it's straight up, I mean, it's a misfit's eye on that side. That's there's no denying that, and that's because I love the Misfits. They kind of help shape me into the person I am today. I grew up in Southern California, and, you know, Southern California is worth three things, gangster rap, horrible hair metal, and pop punk. So it's just, these things have shaped my soul, and it was when, so Skeleton Crew came about, I was still married to my ex-wife, and our friends Hero and Nikki were over, and I think we went to Blockbuster, so if that tells you how long ago this was, we were in a Blockbuster. And
I just went to Obi-Wan Kenobi mode and went, now there's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah. I think I found my old Blockbuster card the other day, actually, when I was cleaning out a cabin. And then what happened? So we saw that somebody made an attempt, I think it was an attempt, to do a movie of Stephen King's Skeleton Crew. And I think Nikki Oakes, who actually is one of the co-hosts of Comic Crypt, she and her husband Mike Oakes, so Nikki said, made some offhanded comment about the four of us being out, we are a Skeleton Crew, because we were all a bunch of, like, you know, horror fans and horror rock and horror punk kids, and I was like, wow, that's a cool name, I like that a lot. And then I didn't want to just straight up be Skeleton Crew, like C-R-U-E, so I, you know, the only other crew in my mind and in my heart is Motley Crew. So I just put those two together. And then not too long ago, I think maybe a couple years ago at this point, 2 years ago, something like that, I added the brand just because Skeleton Crew wasn't unique enough. It didn't stand apart. It didn't stand alone. And it didn't really describe just as a Skeleton Crew alone. So I added the brand so I could say things like, hey, here's a bunch of Skeleton Crew brand podcasts. Get your Skeleton Crew brand t-shirts. Here's some Skeleton Crew brand hot sauce to come. I'm doing that. I'm going to do that. I don't care how long it takes me.
And you had to mention you're from SoCal or Southern Cal. Raised New York myself. So if anything, if we ever go through a rivalry, we could always play on the West Coast, East Coast thing.
West Coast, ride or die.
Oh, I'm Tupac. East Coast.
We have Tupac and Snoop.
I'm East Coast, man. I'm East Coast. Born and raised. But your credentials being said and put out there, what have you been thoughts have been of the latest round of DC Squared Universe, because it's not really the MCU, it's DC Universe movies out there. Because a lot of the fanboys have been putting so much hate on these movies, it's disgusting. Literally. I probably put my fair share of hate on some of it, but it's the fair hate, if I could say that, because with Batman versus Superman, which came out earlier this year, to me there was too many storylines trying to come together, wrapped into one big storyline, which didn't work. They had the right amount of characters in there, Batman and Superman, and with a little bit of Wonder Woman, but too many storylines going on at the same damn time. That was one of my problems with it, and plus they killed Superman too goddamn early.
Yeah.
It should have been later on in the movie universe. It's too damn soon.
And then you retcon, like, not retcon, but you didn't even commit. That was the part that baffled me. You just killed one of your big, your No, yeah, one of your biggest characters, because I'd say Batman might hold a little more precedent over Superman, considering he's had more in the non-reader's public eye with cartoons and other movies. I mean, yeah, there's been Superman movies and Superman cartoon more recent. But even the Superman cartoon, I still think had Batman in it, so he didn't even get to fly alone. They kill him, okay? He's dead. All right, yeah. You read the comics, you know anything about Death of Superman? Hey, that doesn't stick. That's okay. It's comic books. Nothing sticks, ever. But you didn't even let the moviegoer sit in suspense for a little while. Like, at all. Like, you instantly showed, hey, floating dirt over the casket, something weird's happening. Like, we didn't... The average moviegoer didn't get to live in any amount of sorrow over the loss of an icon for any amount of time.
Yeah, for me, I kind of like what they did with Doomsday, even though it was, again, being somewhat of a DC fanboy, it was totally wrong. But they did it, even though Doomsday kind of looked like a Ninja Turtle reject, if you want to go that far in the rage, they kind of did him justice, because I guess they wanted to. Some of my friends who are big DC fanboys, they've said that with Doomsday, every time he's either killed or severely wounded, he gets more spikes. Mm-hmm. So what better way to show the spikes coming into play by starting him off, as I said, like a Ninja Turtle reject, and him eventually getting spikes. It's a cop-out, but it kind of shows that a little bit. But, there is hate with this, but reasonable hate. I've seen a lot of hate with... when it comes to the movie DC movie universe, I'm a big animation fan. Because that's how I kind of know about a lot of the DC characters. And my friends fill me in with a lot of the additional information. And there was so much hate with the Killing Joke.
I didn't see the Killing Joke yet.
Wait a minute. I ought to take your DC fanboy card away from you. Right here, right now. How dare you?
I don't know. It was the cartoon, it seemed cool. I'll get around to watching it, but I mean, for the stuff that I read going into it, it just, what they did with, like, they built some sort of relationship between Batman and Batgirl that I wasn't necessarily, it's not even about, like, being okay with. It was more of, it was just unnecessary to me. So why change an already good story? That was my opinion on that. That just didn't make sense to me.
My thoughts on it was that, and listeners, you probably heard my thoughts last week with our hostful in regards to this, that with this the Killing Joke animation film, up until this point, Batgirl was not introduced in any way, shape, or form. In the new animation universe. She was kind of introduced in the 90s a little bit, but not too much. So they had to find a way to kind of reintroduce her a little bit and show everyone that in this point she is kind of a rookie still. She doesn't have that experience. And some people say that the writers kind of crossed the line with the Batman, Batgirl sex scene, which they kind of did tastefully without going into the Japanese anime, oh dear God, I don't want to see this territory.
Yeah.
But then after that, it kind of goes into the Killing Joke storyline, and which a lot of people, depending on who you speak to in the DC fandom, some say they did right. Some people say they did not do too well. That they changed things too slightly to the worse. It's kind of hard to explain without... I don't want to spoil it too even though you might already know the ending to it because you probably read the initial issue.
Oh yeah.
But I don't want to spoil it for those who haven't seen it yet. I do recommend watching it. The only minor cringe moment in the movie is the Batman Batgirl sex scene in it. But it had. Please keep in mind, for those who haven't seen it, this is also directed to you, Jay, that they have to set up Batgirl somehow.
Yeah. Well, here, I'll spoil it. Batgirl becomes a Hulk.
It's all aliens.
Aliens did it. Batgirl becomes a Hulk. Robin is turned into a dinosaur. I didn't understand that part in the book. The Joker turns out to be a pretty good guy. Family man. He takes care of his kids, pays his child support. He is actually a dentist on the side, we come to find out. So, spoiler alert.
And this is all fact, folks. If you don't believe it, just chalk it up for the Mandela effect.
I'll come up with a million different versions of that then.
Let's see, what do you think? What have you seen Suicide Squad yet?
I didn't see it. I'm gonna wait.
Oh my god! That we're going 2 for 2 here.
Hey, here's the thing. Here's the thing.
I can't rub you too
there's
much.
There's so much DC going on right now that it's just, and it's so unrelated and so. My view on this is, sure, you can be a DC-er and go see every single one of, like, the DCEU movies and all that kind of stuff. Great. Awesome. Cool. But then you're not going to go home and watch, in my opinion, the superior content, which is the CW shows, because holy crap, those shows just killing it. They have introduced an unbelievable amount of characters. Successfully.
I'll agree with that. I'll agree with that. I've told people when it comes to the CW shows and them with their utilizing the characters in that particular, the TV universe for DC Comics is awesome. But to me, being a fan since Smallville, I feel like I've had this almost abusive relationship with the CW because people have told me, Superman's coming to Supergirl or Superman's coming to the Arrow. I just like, yeah, they said the same shit with Smallville, and who do we get? We got the Green Arrow. I'll believe this when I see it. Here's some pictures on, you know, the CW site. Photoshop. I'll believe it when it actually airs on TV. I've been lied to by the CW for so many years. Yeah. They do a damn good job with their shows. Flash for the past 2 seasons has been awesome. Frustrating, but awesome. Mm-hmm. Meaning how they tie Flash with the Arrow and Arrow with Flash. That's what
right.
Frustrates me. Now they're mixing Supergirl in this mix and the Paradox storyline, so it's going to be even more frustrating, and I'm going to be yelling at my TV for the next year. But they do a damn good job. The writing's on point. They have decent characters, decent storylines. Individually, when you try to connect everything, that's where the frustration comes in. But they do everything so damn well. I've had friends who love Arrow and hate Arrow because of the whole flashback aspects of things, and that shouldn't happen. But if they continue with the flashbacks, I want to see the flashbacks in this season and how they kind of work that into it. Because there's so many ways they could work the flashbacks in it. If you can understand where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
That he could remember. Yeah, kind of like he's remembering the alternate timeline that should be going on. But.
Yeah.
They could go that route. I could be completely wrong. But that's one way they could take it, and it could be completely awesome. But that's not going to happen like that. But my other frustration, at least this past season, was in regards to the Flash Supergirl crossover. I understand why there was the frustration, because if you've seen both episodes, it's like Flash. All right, what'd you do?
Shut up. don't worry about that. I'm not like discrimination, Chris. I can't see that.
But for those, did you see that crossover episode with Flash and Supergirl?
No, I just started Supergirl because Supergirl was not on Hulu during the first season. So,
well, it's on Netflix too.
Yeah, they just dropped it on Netflix now, so I'm finally getting into Supergirl. I thought the first episode was cool. I started the second one. I'm enjoying it so far. Like all these CW shows, if you can make it through maybe like the first three episodes, like just kind of choke them down, because they're not bad, but they're not super eventful. It's, you know.
But you got to remember, Supergirl
stuff. But
Supergirl is not CW; it's CBS.
No, it's on CW now.
Yeah, it's on CW now.
Yeah, but so you kind of have to.
Yeah, you kind of have to choke it down even harder because it's CBS, not CW. Yeah. I picked up the crossover episode when it aired, so I could understand the kind of the Flash season a little bit better. But when the other end of the Flash, what would be the other end of that episode on the Flash side, there was no mention at all of what happened in the Supergirl universe, which would have kind of boosted that episode's watch rate later on, because we have this on-demand aspect of things right now, and they didn't. And I don't know if it was because of the aspect of CBS and CW being two different networks, and the rivalry, the ownership. That's the frustrating thing when it comes to the whole DC thing, is that too many hands in the pot saying mine. Some people don't really understand that when it comes to comic universes that are fans. They're like, why don't, you know, we see more of this? Why don't we see more of that? Yeah, there is a lot of hands in the pot. DC, the creators own their work, and Warner Brothers owns the work copyrights too, and it's kind of hard for DC to say, yes, let's do this and kind of follow the Marvel approach to things, when everybody kind of has the "this is mine" attitude. And if the DC studios, but if the studios want to say, hey, we want to drop this character and we want to drop that character and we want to utilize this, let's kind of do what Marvel is doing. They kind of really are reluctant to do it because there is so many legal ramifications in it. It's disgusting, and we kind of see that with the news that's coming out of Marvel, that it's the same way, that hey, why don't we tie everything together? And everybody's going, no, this is ours, it's ours. The TV people don't want to give up their stuff, and the movie people don't want to give up their stuff.
Yeah.
Timing, cost, there's a lot of stuff that goes in. Some of it is the mine aspect, the whole aspect of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the whole aspect of it's a fever, quote-unquote, fever dream of Agent Carlson is the dumbest freaking idea ever, and I hate it. I hate it. Mm. Someone should slap what's-his-name and let him, you know, let this be official Marvel Universe right here, right now. You know, it's not. Let Agent Carlson lives matter, man. Hashtag.
I like that. But yeah, that's what DC is working against them, is that, so if you're a Marvel fan, cool. If it's all connected. It's all connected. So you could love movies but hate the Netflix shows. It, you know, that's okay. Don't worry about it. Like, it's all connected. That's the thing about DC, is it's not. So you're going to have fans within fandom. You're going to be a fan. Like, right. Some people are going to be a fan of Ezra Miller. Some people are going to say a fan of Grant Gustin. Or Gustin. You know, you're going to have your favorite Flash. You're going to have your favorite Super. Like, you can't... It's a really weird and just kind of bonkers move to establish two separate universes to where you're producing competing fandom within your own brand. And I think that's why I'm not super into... Well, and then, so the movies, to me, the writing has just been... I can't speak for Suicide Squad, but those trailers did not give me a lot of hope.
Suicide Squad was a very good film. I'll put it like this. They did despite all the hate towards it, they did a very good job. And it sounds like I'm knocking it, but if they took Batman out of his cameos out of that movie and replaced Batman with a cop, just a regular beat cop, you would have had a great science fiction action movie. That's if you took DC out of it and just left the regular characters in there, you would have had a great action movie. That's what it is.
Yeah.
But in some instances, it kind of plays like Guardians of the Galaxy. Other instances, it plays like trailers just mashed together. But it holds up. It did what it had to do, and it's very it kind of did it well. I do recommend watching it. I do if. Just find Uncle Tony. If you have to get it that way, I know you have a brand new bouncing baby boy.
Little baby boy
to take care of.
That kid. He's great. He's crazy though. He does take up all of my time. And honestly, like we have local babysitters that we can definitely trust to, you know. Combat his, you know, his rage. But it's just like, I don't know, because if Tiff and I went to go see Suicide Squad, it's going to be like $24 at the theater, and it's just, after BVS, DC hasn't earned my $12 yet. They haven't earned it back. I'll give them a Redbox viewing, absolutely. I'll pay the dollar to see it in Redbox, but I'm not paying theater prices for any DC movies until they wow. No, that's not true. Even if I do see, I will see Suicide Squad, and if I'm not impressed by Suicide Squad, the trailers for Justice League and Wonder Woman have impressed me so much that I will be going to theater for those. But here's the thing: the difference between what's coming with Justice League and Wonder Woman and what BVS, Man of Steel, and Suicide Squad did not have is the hand of Geoff Johns. And that the fact that Geoff Johns is involved now, he saved DC Comics. He's going to save DC movies. I have all the faith in the world in him. And those trailers looked incredible. I mean, I did not like Ezra Miller in BVS. I thought he looked like a dirty pirate. And Barry Allen is not a dirty pirate. Ezra Miller in the Justice League trailer looked far more, you know, police, like homicide, whatever he is, CSI guy, crime scene investigator, is that what he is? I don't even know what Barry Allen does anymore. He gives off the nerdy Barry Allen far more than he did in his little tiny stint in BVS, and I like that.
Yeah, now that Zack Snyder is having less and less of a role in it, the movie should get better. One of the things I want to bring up is that a lot of people can agree that putting out a good TV project, in essence, TV show, DC has been winning that war for the past 10-plus years. But Marvel right now with Netflix has been coming out hitting and hitting hard.
Oh my God.
I'll say that. I'll say this. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is good, but, you know, with Netflix, Marvel is hitting hard, and they're they're coming back really strong. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm excited to see a lot of what's coming out on Netflix and with everything on that end. But on the movie side, despite the X-Men mutant side of the universe, Marvel Studios is putting out a lot of great content movie-wise.
Yeah, X-Men is fucking Fox's fault.
And from what I hear, if Marvel is able to at least do what they did with Sony and a couple of the other people that own those particular characters, like what Sony owns with Spider-Man, and kind of say, hey, do the back-end deal of, all right, you write the stories, you make the movies, you just give us a couple of $1 million so we're happy. That way, we're happy, you're happy, and the fans are happy. And it works. Let it, you know, why not kill a good thing? But Fox has to be the asshole right now. And if they come around and say, wait a minute, DC is making between 800 to $1 billion+ on each one of their movies, and we're sucking right now, you know, let's go to them and work a deal. And we might not see a mixed universe between mutants and Avenger type ordeal until later on, but right now, at least they're trying. I'll say they're trying. They're trying to get their stuff back and their ducks in a row, movie-wise, so they can make shit better for us as fans, and that's awesome.
Yeah,
that is awesome.
Fox will never do it. They will never do it, only because Deadpool. Deadpool was such a hit that Fox can stand alone. Like they've regained that confidence of, okay, now we know how to do our style of comic book movies. And I'm betting the farm on this one. The next Wolverine movie will be so much more violent. Since it's Hugh Jackman's last one, this is going to be we're gonna see Deadpool style violence, but Wolverine. And if they're smart, they would have made this movie dark as shit. I don't agree that they should do Old Man Logan, because there's too many Marvel Studios properties that make up the Old Man Logan storyline. But I bet you anything they're going to make this just... If anything, they should go all out and do a Wolverine Sabretooth grudge match. But then I hear, what's his name, Mr. Sinister is going to be in it, so we might be looking at a baton handoff to X-23.
As much as I would love to see a more R-rated comic book type movies, thanks to Deadpool, that could be the utter death nail. I'm not knocking Deadpool. It was a great movie. But it can be the death nail in a lot of the comic book movies that, oh, because Deadpool was literally a blockbuster, let's make ours rated R now because Deadpool was rated R. No, you don't. Because of that, you don't have to do that. You could say now, you can do that. You just don't have to do that.
Yeah, but Fox always... You give Fox an inch and they're going to take a mile. So I promise you, they're going to keep going with the R-rating thing. And then Marvel's already been doing the R-rated stuff. They've just been putting it on Netflix. So
right.
Marvel came to the table first with this R-rating thing.
But my thing is that with, like, the DCU and all that, hey, look at Deadpool. That was a blockbuster with an R rating. Mm-hmm. Let's do that R rating and go for that R rating because that's what people want because of Deadpool. What's the reason? Deadpool.
Yeah.
Push a PG-13 rating. Maybe do an unrated cut on DVD, but don't skimp out. Don't make an R-rated movie like the video I saw on YouTube a couple of weeks ago. Don't make an R-rated movie a PG movie. Make a PG movie with R-rated material that you could add later.
Yeah.
That way it's an edgy PG-13, and when the DVD comes out, it makes it even better. It's, again, having that cake, then all of a sudden, oh, now here's a cake with frosting. Don't just give us cake without... take off the frosting, put it on.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to make the I'm a fat boy, so I have to make food puns. So, it's that aspect of things. You know, studios are fickle, odd people, and so are the people that they try to pass some of these movies with. So.
Yeah, I don't know. DC, I haven't seen the Blu-ray for BVS yet, so I can't really. I don't know. I don't know what a DC R-rated movie looks like just yet.
I've been hearing it's kind of better, but it doesn't add too much to it. I have a Flixster version of it, but since Flixster in their infinite wisdom decided to take the apps off the consoles, I don't have access to my Flixster accounts anymore.
What a silly move, Flixster.
To me, that's a dick move. That's a dick move right there. It's like, wait a minute, I got to watch it on my computer now? You know, while you can watch it on a smart device, what if my smart device is my console?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. You know, that's a terrible move. What the hell were they thinking?
I know that it used to be on the consoles, then they took it off.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, it's that whole aspect of if there's a licensing issue, Sony and Xbox decided we want more money and Flixster said no, it's kind of hard to say.
Yeah.
It literally is. What else? I'm blaming you for Kung Fu Fury. I'm literally blaming you for that.
Not like that?
No, it was, in its way, the B-moviest awesomeness that ever was. But, it's for the listeners out there, Kung Fury is this, it's kind of done in an 80s B-movie style that is an utter train wreck that you cannot look away from. It's like, I want to turn this off, but I can't.
It's a 1980s fever dream. Like, you have the flu or, like, some kind of stomach, like, food poisoning, and your body is thrust into, like, the most feverish state where you're hallucinating like you've never hallucinated before, but it's all 1980s.
And you just dropped three hits of acid at the same time. It's like, oh, my God. There is every 80s stereotype movie thing in there, for the exception of topless women.
True.
That's the only thing they kind of left out. And I'm like, when I was watching it, I wasn't paying attention to the runtime. And after about, it just ends. I'm like, how could it just end?
It just happens to you.
Son of a fuck.
Yeah.
You know. And I look at the runtime, bring up the runtime, it's like 30 minutes. I'm like, no, I want it to be an hour and 30 minutes. Where's the other hour? This was getting good.
Yeah. Give Triceratops the backstory.
Something, finish this, you know. It's like some of my friends on Facebook is like, well, you should have got a better hooker. But that reference holds up. It's like having sex for the first time. It's like, man, that was too damn quick. It should have lasted a little bit longer than that. But
that's every time with me. It's very brief and unsatisfying for everyone involved.
I'm not going to go there. I have a little bit of respect to you right now. If you were one of my closer friends, I would have definitely went there. It was just... It plays like, those who haven't seen this, if you have Netflix, watch it. It's so, oh my God, it's literally, you have to watch it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, what's the Steve Odekirk flick? It was like, he did his own, like, a Kung Fu parody type deal.
What was it, Kung Pao? Was that one?
Yeah, it was Kung Pao, which... For the folks out there, I do recommend watching because it's funny as hell, and it has four audio tracks because it has the regular what was shown in movies. It has the what was actually recorded. It has the director's commentary, and it has a kind of like a British soundtrack or vocal track where everybody's in a British accent. So you're watching a movie. In essence, if you want to watch it, you're watching a movie four times. Nice. So to me, having a movie like that makes me want to, you know, message the creator and going, you son of a bitch. I had to watch a son of a bitch in movie four goddamn times because you freaking made me. And it's so damn good. I want to watch it again because there's probably shit I missed in it. And then I'm like, there's so much in this. Like, how did I survive? Oh, I just hacked the bullets away. Wait, what? I just did not hear that correctly. And the whole aspect of he gets to be the chosen one because he's been simultaneously struck by lightning and bit by a cobra.
How else do you become a kung fu master? You explain that to me.
I mean, literally. I mean, it's funny. It's literally like every 80s stereotype mixed into this movie.
Oh, man.
I wanted to hear the joke from, like, Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie in this. It's like, you took away their rights, but what about the rights of that little girl? You know, it's just, you know, it's the gruff voice, the loner cop, his partner dies, and, you know, he's forced to take on a new partner. In this case, it's a Triceratops human hybrid of a cop, and somehow Thor's in this. I'm like,
with his sweet biceps and pecs.
With his epic biceps and pecs. And if Danny Trejo, the only way this could have been any more awesome is if Danny Trejo was Thor. that would have been, I would have been on board watching it six times the other night if he was Thor. And that would have made it, it would have been wrong, but it would have been funny as hell. I would have just took it and ran with it, and like he would have fit, and the humor in that would have been you're laughing over this. I am a Danny Trejo fan, sitting right here.
Trejo's great.
Yeah, he is. He's the equivalent. He's the Mexican American equivalent of Samuel L. Jackson. They'll both be in anything and everything if the script is right and there's money involved.
Oh yeah,
literally.
Well, a man who's actually been to prison, you're not going to turn down work.
Right, right. And everything he seems to do, it seems to be not just fit him, but he adds something to it. Okay. And he said before in interviews that he's willing to help out the up-and-coming filmmakers. So,
well,
not to mention his...
I need to send him my number then.
I want to meet him. I want to have a beer with this man.
Yeah, right.
What else can we get into? I know part of you said you were kind of briefly. Did you hear the Mandela Effect episode I put out, or not yet? You did.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on that whole aspect?
Oh, I liked the Super Collider opening a gate to hell. That was pretty sweet.
Just don't go into the movies, man. I mean, it's just they're not IQ lowering as the flat Earth theories, but it's almost up there. I was watching one prior to this recording that she went out grocery shopping. She knew she had. She opened up when she got home. She with two dozen eggs. She bought two dozen eggs. Opened up the fridge. There was one dozen sitting in there that she had for the week prior. Put in one of the new cartons of eggs, closed the door, went to get the other carton of eggs, and when she reopened the door, there were, instead of two cartons of eggs, or two dozen eggs, there were three dozen eggs sitting there. So she had four dozen eggs sitting in her fridge, and she's chalking up to the Mandela effect. And she said, well, one of the eggs in the older cartons were cracked. I don't buy cartons with cracked eggs in it. Okay, this is what I was going into a little bit with my buddy Lloyd, you know, that we were saying that you could have, you just probably didn't notice it, or you, shit like that has happened.
Yeah.
You know, you know, how many times have you opened up a door, you close it, you still don't know what it's in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yeah. I think I said in the show that with, if I didn't, I'll say it here, with something with like the Berenstain or Stein Bears, where if it was the EI instead of the AI writing, if the books were printed with a script title, who knows, in repeated printings where they said, we can't have the script font on this book, let's put a print in some numbnuts, instead of seeing an EI, put an AI, and everybody just said, just run with it.
Why don't we talk about what it really is? It's a glitch in the Matrix.
It's a glitch in the Matrix.
That's what it comes down to. We're all in this human, like, little pod farm, being pumped full of these dreams, and these giant mechanical squids are feeding off of our life essence. So that's what it really is.
Either way, if that what it really was, I'd be a hell of a lot more attractive and dating a lot better women.
I'm talking about, you're a knockout. Aww.
Yes, but.
And I'm not just a flirt. That's not who I am. I have self-respect.
But it's, not to mention, I wouldn't be living in a hellhole of a town, but that's just me. That's just me.
Where the libraries are corrupt.
And so is half the town.
Really?
Yeah.
It's big candy.
Basically, basically big our town doesn't want
to... Crime lord. I'm
sorry. Oh, yeah. I'll make him the secret crime lord of Winchester. basically, I've told people what... Because there's nothing going on where I live at, they go... either north to the big city that's up there, which is about the same size as where I live, or they go south to the big city down there. And both of those cities always have some sort of activity going on during the weekend. The city I live in doesn't have jack shit. For those folks who are listening to this, Jay lives out in Nashville. Nashville, Tennessee, as opposed to Nashville, Alaska. But
no, that's the one.
he could probably verify that in Nashville, that a lot of people are gradually, because it's one of the music capitals of the country, people are naturally go downtown. There's always something going on.
Yeah, they're always honky talking out here. But the geek scene's growing, though. Not even just geeks, just the underground. The underground is becoming so much more above ground that, I don't know, they're so close to decriminalizing marijuana here. It's just like, Nashville has become just so rapidly progressive. And they say that like 80 to 100 people move here a day. So I think that's what it is. So many California folk and New Yorkers and all them, they're all migrating here. So Nashville's quickly becoming one of those, I don't know, kind of like what Austin is or Portland. Yeah. And you know, one of those kind of just really hipster-driven, yuppie, one-percenter, base-level kind of punk rock artist kind of vibe areas, but I like it. But it doesn't fit the geographical location. You know, we don't belong in the Bible Belt here in Nashville anymore, and every day that's more and more apparent.
I've told people Martinsburg, West Virginia makes Detroit look good.
Oh, water.
probably a tad bit better than Detroit, but it's still kind of bad. We are within the top 10 high heroin traffic areas of the country.
Oh.
Because of the that's part of Martinsburg problem. It's a benefit. We're growing as economically, kind of like a lot of cities are on this side of the United States, but because of that, the town promotional committees don't want to start promoting and doing activities in our downtown area to kind of bring more people into the downtown area, so they're migrating to the towns either north of us or south of us where there's more activities, which is sustaining those towns a hell of a lot more than Martinsburg. This was covered in our last week's episode. Hostful, please download on iTunes, Podbean, so forth and so on. Links will be provided at the end of the show.
Do it.
Our mall is closing.
What?
Yeah, our mall is closing. It's the anchor stores are staying open, but the inside is closing down. And they're going to try to make it into type of an open air type mall or type of ordeal. And people are asking why. I've told them it's a kind of a effect that because there's nothing going on here, the mall is dying. That's one part of the problem. And again, they come up with the aspect of, but all the businesses are coming to the Martinsburg area. I said, yes, they are. But when places like Hagerstown and Winchester are getting all the tourism, they're staying in that town and spending money. They are not coming to Martinsburg for their weekends, their entertainment. They're going to either north of us or south of us, and they're going to that mall. They're going to that particular economic environment, not ours.
Yeah.
Plus, the malls in Hagerstown and Winchester both have a theater attached to it. Meaning if you go to a movie that's when the mall's still open and you go early, you're going to wander around the mall and either eat something, spend money there, something. The theater that's near our mall is not attached. So you might go to one of the restaurants, but you're not going to go shopping. So it's dead. Not to mention, from the mall's aspect of things, with places like Walmart, Books a Million, FYE, GameStop, and places like that that have midnight releases, they want an outside entrance. They can't be in a mall. So a mall is restricting their business, because no mall wants to stay open until 1 o'clock in the morning to placate one particular business.
Yeah.
It's a two-edged sword.
I had no idea that that kind of world existed. Because I come from San Diego, and, like, Nashville was kind of a different world to me when I first got here. And then I lived in Florida for a little while, and Florida just... I don't know about Florida.
Florida is cheap and fun, but it's filled with old people that don't want to move over and think they're special.
Specifically, Orlando is a weird place to be, because Orlando is such a college and tourist town that it's just such a weird melting pot of America. Like, you get everybody down there. It's so hard to... It's a great place to, like, meet new people and relate to, you know, somebody you would never talk to on a normal basis, just because those kind of characters don't exist where you come from. But, you get some... Oh, I was introduced to, reggaeton? Like, the staple kind of club music down there, where it's the same beat over and over and over again, that people tend to play, like, at 7 in the morning. In the parking lot, what the fuck are you doing? Like, this is
it's the techno groove wannabe bassline music, yeah, sort of thing.
It's like, what the fuck is going on?
I will say this: on my feed, on my personal Facebook feed, I have where I used to live in Florida listed, and they've came so far. It used to be one of these cruddy little towns that I would have said, If they didn't change, they would have looked like exactly like Martinsburg. Run down, crappy looking. I wouldn't walk the downtown area at all.
Yeah.
And they pretty much said, you know, we're going to scrape this clean and we're going to revitalize the whole city. We're going to get people to come into our downtown and spend money in our downtown. And from the looks of it, that's what they've done. They literally revitalized from every aspect of that downtown. And I tell people that I am a Florida, Ocala, Florida resident before I am in Martinsburg, even though I live in Martinsburg far longer than I have Ocala, because of what they've done and what they, you know, are doing. And not to mention, they are starting to have their own little geek movement as well, which is good for them. They have a con down there that's in their, I think, third or fourth year, and they're looking for a bigger place because it's starting to get the ball rolling. So which I'm proud of them. Any place that could do something like that and have a growing convention, geek pop culture convention, hey, I'm all for it. Absolutely. You know, just that you being in a bigger city, you get access to the bigger stuff. I have to travel into either DC or Baltimore. For me, DC is a little bit easier because I could take the train in. Yeah. But which is good on me. I still have coffee I got to drink now because of Baltimore. While I was at Baltimore, you've probably seen the photo I put up of Death Wish Coffee. I still have to crack the seal on that sucker.
Nice.
I'll probably be up for like 3 days and not crash.
That's a fun way to live, man.
Oh, I used to work third shift. I know how it is. Is there anything you want to bring up or anything on your end?
On my end?
Yeah, geek-related or anything like that.
What's going on geek-related right now?
Well, the con scene's still going on. Do you have any tips for the new con-goer or convention-goer?
It's becoming a war zone out there, kids. I mean, I wouldn't... If you have not... Okay, now you see, so here you go. You know what? We're going to RPG this shit. Conning. Conning is questing. Let's put it in terms like that. You're not going to dive in to the highest level quest without building your character. You got to build your character before you start going under these cons. Conning it's full of peril. So you're going to want to start small. You're going to want to start local. You know, get the vibe for what a con is. I mean, if you, like, Nashville still has their, and I don't mean this in any, like, demeaning way at all, but there's still rinky-dink comic book show that's at the fairgrounds. Great people go there, great vendors. I've scored some killer books there. It's still a lot of fun. But something like that is, you know, at your local fairgrounds, like, look around, you know, jump on some geek feeds, like in geek feeds in your area or like local kind of event pages and stuff, and go to those mini shows. You know, like you'll see a couple cosplayers, you'll get the vibe, like, you know, artist tables. If you're going to comic cons, you'll get like a feel for, you know, flipping through your long boxes on the go. What kind of dealers are out there, because you're going to run into some shady dealers. You know, and you'll get the rush of like finding that gem that you've been looking for, or that gem you never even knew you wanted. And then start, you know, gradually stepping up. Go to, let's say, like, I think MegaCon in Orlando, it's in Orlando. That one's that's still safe to go to. Wizard Worlds are still safe to go to. I mean, and by safe, I mean, you're not going to want to dive headfirst into like a New York or a San Diego, Long Beach. Long Beach is this coming weekend, I think. That show's growing pretty quick. But and so you're going to want to kind of step into it, because if you are just this newfound comic fan or geek culture, pop culture fan. Like, you've always been a fan, but you weren't aware of the community, really. You didn't realize, like, there's a lot of us out there, and we really love to get together. And in our get-togethers, there are different sanctions. There's cosplayers, there's comic kids, there's video gamers, there's just general pop culture themes. You go to one of those bigger cons, I mean, everyone's there with a purpose. They're not going to be mean, and they're not going to be necessarily rude, but they're everyone at a big con is on a mission. And if you're in their way, you're going to get trampled. And it's not going to be a really fun experience for you, because you're going to be so overwhelmed with the sea, like the sheer volume of people, the amount of things to do. I mean, if you're going to a San Diego or a New York or something of that nature, you're going to want to go there with a purpose. There's a panel you want to see. There's a guest you want to meet. And that's all you're going to do. I mean, at a smaller show, you can take in everything. At the bigger shows, you really got to be committed to what you want to do, because unless you enter with a plan and some experience under your belt, you're going to miss out on what makes those large size cons worth it. And that is my rant.
And as always, those out there going to their first show, number-wise, I heard reports coming out from Atlanta with Dragon Con this year. From what a lot of people have told me, it used to be a very it used to have a bad reputation. It's working against that reputation and try to become something good. Their numbers this past weekend, which was the second, third, and fourth of September, their number high was 77,000 people for the day. Word was coming out from several local news agencies out of Atlanta saying Atlanta was expecting an extra 500,000 people for the weekend because it was Labor Day. There was like one or two sports games going on, both on the national and the college level, and plus there was Dragon Con, so they had to prepare for that. I was at Baltimore that weekend, which surprisingly they had a lot of people despite Dragon Con being held the same weekend.
Oh, nice.
Their Saturday number, from what one of the janitors said, he said when he last heard, there were 35,000 tickets sold for Saturday alone. Nice. So, I've told people Baltimore has always been a good con for me. It's a good starter con. It's a good starter big con.
Yeah, because you can go there and see everything and really enjoy yourself and feel like really fulfilled at the end of the day. You got to take some pictures with some great cosplayers. You got to meet some awesome artists. You got to flip through some long boxes, maybe pick up some original art. It's, you know, another really good con to go to is Heroes Con in North Carolina, Charlotte. That one is rapidly growing too, though.
Right now, I'll release this little bit of a tidbit. Before MegaCon got sold to a bigger agency, the people that ran Baltimore, Heroes, and MegaCon all knew each other, and the Virginia Comic Con, they all knew each other. So they kind of all shared tidbits and promotional people or guests and so forth. The Virginia Comic Con was, best way to describe it, was a small fish in a very large pond. Because they're pretty much a hotel ballroom type of ordeal, but since he knows a lot of the bigger promoters, he's able to get the bigger guests for his show. So it was fun to go to that show the 1 year. So I recommend that to a lot of people to start out with. I recommend Baltimore to start out with because it's very ticket holder friendly, because the people make the new people coming in very welcoming. It's very open and very – and for the new person out there that might be listening to this, you can easily spend $5 as well as $1,000 at a show.
Yeah.
Easily.
Oh, yeah.
Easily. Trust me, I have. You could spend $5 in 10 minutes as well as $1,000. It's that simple. And trust me, if I had $1,000 last week at Baltimore, I would have spent $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
I literally would have spent $1,000. And that is not a lot. Not last week, the 5th. I would have. There was so much page art. Oh, my God. It would have been sucked dry.
Yeah.
I would have been like, gimme, gimme, gimme.
Would have been like me at HeroesCon in 2012, I want to say. I don't remember which one it was. I think it was 12. I got to meet Stan Lee. One of my favorite artists ever, Clayton Crane, was hanging out. And I got to, that was real fun meeting him, man. He's a interesting dude. I like him. He was telling me, because I had him sign, what was it, Carnage, the first issue of Carnage USA, just because I love the cover work that he did on that one. It's Carnage hunched over with an American flag draped over his shoulders onto the ground. I love that cover. So while he was signing that, and I bought his just original art book, and I don't know how it came up, but he started telling me this like story about being in art school, and his art teacher was talking about if you can, something about placing the character between two slices of bread to make a sandwich, and the dimensions in that theory make for a successful adaptation of a character. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? But I was compelled. I loved every second of his really, really bizarre description on his job.
I've had experiences like that with a lot of artists. One year it was with, I think his name is Kevin Baker.
Mm-hmm.
He just went up to get a simple program signed and my sketchbook signed. And we just got into a half-hour conversation about art, comics, cosplayers, the whole nine yards for about a half an hour.
Nice.
And it was like completely awesome and compelling. It's like, wait a minute, this is a big name artist right here, and I'm just holding a casual conversation like he's a regular attendee. I got kind of like an education a little bit in reference from Derek Robertson. He was doing a sketch at the Heroes Initiative booth, and he's telling about how he's able to remember each one of the pages he's drawn, what went behind each page, the story behind, you know, artwork. And I mean, it can be really interesting if you hit a show on the right day.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny. It's, you get fun, raunchiness. I mean, it spans the spectrum, literally. Literally, it is as fun as it can be. I'm sure Jay's gotten a lot of good deals as well as I have on certain days. So, I haven't seen a fight yet at a show. I've seen...
Go to San Diego.
I've been... I've told a few people, the one show I will not go back at. And it's got to come a long way to get out of its bad reputation with me, and that's Otakon. It's a Japanese animation show, and they've been known for their rudeness for years. So, it's that bad. That bad.
Is that the one you did that episode about, where they just kind of dropped the ball on every imaginable aspect?
No. Otakon is, they're out of, right now, they're moving to DC, but they were in Baltimore for the longest time. And I've told the story before, is that when the year I went, the cosplayer is at, for every one person not in cosplay, there's at least 8 other people in cosplay.
No, damn.
And which is awesome to see. You have a lot of great cosplayers, but each one is ruder than the next.
Yeah, it's a competition show, man.
Yeah, it's like a competition show because they don't want their picture taken, even though you're trying to be polite and you don't. If they say no, fine, okay, no, I won't take your photo. But it's like the aspect of, no, I've been here all day, and they're literally taking every aspect of their frustration out and their rudeness out on you, and you, all you're doing is trying to be polite. And when the year I went, the first day, I couldn't buy a day pass. I had to buy a three-day pass. Had to. The first day, I couldn't get into the dealer's room because they capped the line. There was a line to get in, and there was another line to get into the dealer's room. And they capped that line. They capped the line to the each convention panel. They capped the line to the gaming panels, the gaming rooms, and a lot of the movie rooms, too. So you're just hanging out. In essence, I spent $60 or $20 each day just to hang out in the lobby, yeah, for the most part. I did make it into the dealer room the second day, and their artist alley. I got so many dirty looks because apparently I was an outsider, and I was told off by convention staff that why am I blocking convention traffic, yet I was standing next to a wall talking to another congoer about some of the fandoms that are there and some of the anime that we were intrigued with. And the guy said, you have to move out of this area. You're taking up too much space. And he's yelling at us, yet there was I think it was a ninja versus pirate versus Street Fighter fight going, a mock fight going on somewhere else in that area, and he's paying attention to us. So, and I'm like, really? No, no. Yeah. I walked out, and behind me, I wanted to throw a punch, Jay, so bad. It was disgusting. Because I heard behind me, the guys behind me were going, yeah, I was at New York Comic-Con the other day. Todd McFarlane was there. He was blah, blah, going blah, 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 buy my shit. Kevin Smith was there going blah, 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 buy my shit. They both fucking suck. Their art sucks. Their movies suck. Yeah, they were doing all that. And it's like, dude, I'm thinking to myself, like, dude, if I didn't have to come here in another month for Baltimore Comic-Con, I would turn around and deck this motherfucker so damn hard. It'd be disgusting.
Itchy fanboys. But
the show I went on about is AwesomeCon. They're pretty much a money show, right there. They don't care about their fans. They grossly mishandled two of their guests. That's also in one of my episodes of what happened there. But I might go back because it's easier for me to get to that show on a yearly basis. And some of the people I know that live in D.C. Go to that show, so it makes the show worthwhile. And they do have a decent collection of guests and celebrities that I've met before and make that aspect of the show worthwhile. It's just the convention staff that tend to put the bitterness and the hate and the wrongness in the show. I can't fault a show for those that are controlling everything. So
yeah, man, cons have really they've turned into another beast. Like, they're definitely it's really social media. It's not really necessarily like new content. I don't feel like there's necessarily a lot of new pop culture fans. I just think that every day more and more are finding new outlets and new places where they can congregate. And it's just thanks to Facebook and Instagram and whatever Snapchat does. It's bringing people together. Like, all these geeks and nerds and outcasts and misfits, we've always been out there. We just, before social media, did not have a real convenient way of communicating beyond our immediate surroundings.
Yeah, that's what I tried to get across the AwesomeCon promoter, because when I told him, in essence, AwesomeCon lied, he was like, well, we did not lie. I said, well, you did lie in regards to when one of your guests was going to appear, because you said that they were filming. It turns out they were at another show the day before, or will be attending another show the 2 days prior to their appearance at your show. Therefore, you lied. And the reason why we know is because they're on, these celebrities are on Facebook, they're on Twitter, they're on Instagram, they're on Snapchat, they got their own websites. Fans are going to know everything these people do before they do it. And you saying something completely different, the fans are going to peg you for the liar, not them. Unless something happens the day before, meaning we hope to see you at XYZ convention, then the day before they cancel and they tell you and they tell the convention promoter, this is why we had to cancel, then that, this actually did happen to me at Baltimore, with Baltimore. They had, I forgot who it was a major artist that people wanted to see. What happened was, the day before the show was supposed to happen, he emailed his fans and the convention promoter, which emailed the attendees saying, listen, I have a family emergency. I just got word a buddy of mine is getting married. I can't be at the show. I want to be at this guy's wedding. I'm sorry I can't attend. And everybody was like, okay, he's got to cancel. Shit happens. Mm-hmm. Turns out the next day, because a lot of this is when smartphones were starting to get into popularity, and people still checked Facebook either the day before or during the show and so forth and so on. Turns out he was at the Toronto convention signing autographs. Uh-oh. And so therefore he pretty much told a lie to everybody on Facebook and to the promoter, which made the promoter kind of look bad, even though he was constantly trying to put on a quality show for everybody else. It's like, you know, how can you do that to your fans? They came out to Baltimore to see you. You canceled, and you turns out you canceled not because of scheduling conflict. You canceled. You told everybody it was a family issue, that it was a wedding. And it turns out you just went to Toronto for another show for the 3 days. What a way to say screw you to your fans. That pissed off a lot of fans going to Baltimore that might not come back to Baltimore because you had a freaking lie.
Yeah.
You know, because they spent good money to come to this show and you lied. That does happen. So there are guests that do that, but there are still the quality guests, mm-hmm. Out there. I know, I won't say a buddy of mine, I won't say his name is Dave Han or Dave Han. He runs Monster Mania, the one in Jersey and the one that's in Maryland. Quality show, great show. I hear a lot of good things. I've been to one. It's a great show. He had a bad incident with one of the people that he wanted to come out to the show. He got gypped from the fees from the promoter, and he filed suit and won his case because the promoter took his money and didn't there was some the guest that he wanted was kind of known for not showing up a lot of times, but he really wanted this particular guest, and he went through the promoter, he paid the money, and the person was a no-show, and it turns out he was scammed, and he had to file the lawsuit to get his money back. Luckily, it was only $2,000, $3,000. It wasn't like $10,000. Yeah. So, he puts on a quality show. It, like I said, shit does happen.
Yeah. Horror cons are pretty safe to go to no matter what. Those never really seem to get overly, you know, the crowds are still big and the community is still friendly. It's just they don't really seem to be overgrowing themselves. They all seem pretty consistent in handling what they're capable of.
That's what a buddy of mine has told me that because he tried putting out a horror con in the area versus a pop culture show. Mm-hmm. And he said, listen, the reason why my first show failed is because even though people love horror, it's very hard to promote a horror-based con. It's depending on the area. And he said, in this area, it's very hard to promote and put it on because everybody likes it, but they don't want to show up.
It's still a very big niche of people, and a lot of people don't want to take their kids to horror cons too, because they have a tendency to be scary.
And he said that's what part of the problem is that not to mention a lot of them take place in hotels, and you're capable of walking around with some sort of alcoholic beverage, and there's a lot of weaponry involved at horror shows sometimes, and that's a bad mix right there, but still fun. But he said with a pop culture show, it's a very family-friendly event, and it's easier to get the voice actors like I'm trying to think of who voiced Kevin Conroy. Mm-hmm. Like getting Kevin Conroy and the original voice of Optimus Prime. It's easy to get those people, and people bring in their kids because it's a family friendly event. So and he said, not to mention it's easier to bring in people from like Power Rangers and
You touch a wider audience.
The whatnot. So. You get that wider audience, which made his retro show a success. And I'm always happy to promote him. I'll start probably, if I haven't started promoting his show, Winter Show, yet, I will be promoting his Winter Show because we will be having our first booth there.
Oh, snap.
The booth, I think I paid like $150 for two tables. Nice. So it's not that that for a first show, it's not that bad.
That's great.
Hopefully I'll get a banner up and hand out flyers, and I'll probably be handing a few of your flyers out there too. Uh-oh. So I'll bring what I have. Why not?
No, I said, oh.
Why not?
Because the sweetest.
Oh.
No. Fucking. Shove that down people's throats all day long. All about that.
If I'm wearing one of your shirts, Jay, I'll be, I'll have a few of your flyers sitting on the table too.
Speaking of, man, I'm going to do a giant, like, purge sale, I think. Actually, no, I don't think. I'm going to. I want to get rid of all the current stuff I have. I want new. I get so burnt out on my own stuff, and I hate seeing it everywhere, that I've evolved everything, and when I go into like my stock room, I want to see only the new stuff that I've been making. I don't want to see any of the old anymore. Not that I don't like the old stuff, it's more that I hate it. In the way of just kind of, I'm in such a different place, like mentally and creatively, that I want to get rid of it all. So it's out with the old, in with the new kind of mentality. And I don't know exactly when I'm going to get it all set up and assigned on my site. But yeah, it'll be like promotion, like promo code purge, and get like 50% off your order or some crazy thing.
Damn, you guys heard it here first. When Jay actually does it, I'll probably be pushing it on our social media as well. That way you can get a good deal on his shirts. As I've said before, I promote Jay because he is, in essence, a local business, even though he's out of Tennessee. He is a mom-and-pop, literally a mom-and-pop type business, and if you support mom-and-pop businesses, even though he's out of Nashville, you're supporting a local business, not a major chain. I will promote him because he's in essence a brother in arms, a geek in arms, and why not? Yeah. You know.
Likewise, man. I always tell people about the Long Coat Mafia podcast.
I'm gonna if Jay has nothing more, I'm going to close this episode out. We will be doing another crossover episode for International Podcasting Day. There'll be a Friday one-shot, and we'll be instructing all of you in reference to what it is, what goes into making a podcast, which should be very educational. Check this out. It should be dropping September 30th, which is International Podcasting Day.
See, I didn't know that. That's something I learned. That's awesome.
So stay tuned in reference to that. Again, you could find all J stuff by going to SkeletonCrewBrand.com. You could also find all his stuff on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. Feel free while you're at his main website to buy a few t-shirts. He'd be more than happy to send you a t-shirt for whatever they might cost. And you've seen our folks, if you listen to our show and you've seen our videos on Facebook and on YouTube, you've seen what he gives out with his shirts. So we've done unboxings from Jay before. So with all these spiders and promo comics and other stuff. So it's you always get a loot box, mini loot box treat with your purchase. So check him out. Show him some love. Show him support. As always, we can be found on Facebook if you haven't been there and liked our page. By doing so, it's the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. Our email, if you want to email any questions to us and to or to Jay for that matter, you can always email them to us. I'll forward them on to Jay. By emailing us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com. We're on iTunes, and then we're on Google Play Music and Stitcher. Like us and review us on Stitcher. That both of our shows on iTunes. It does help us in a way. Mm-hmm. We'll explain on our podcast episode, so stay tuned for that. And as always, I do have a contest out right now. It's still going on. It ends October 5th, and if there's any entrants, as far as I know, as of this episode, there are no entrants for this contest. We'll announce any winners the October Hostful, though. It's for a VIP ticket for two for the Entertainment Museum in Baltimore, Maryland. So it's from what I hear, it's a great, great museum to go see, and you're getting, in essence, a free ticket for two. All you have to do is email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com and explain why you really want that ticket. That's all you have to do, and we'll pick the winner October 5th. So that's that. What else? Our Instagram and Twitter handles are Long Coat Mafia. So like us and follow us on those two locations. And that's it for now. Do you have anything else you want to promote, Jay?
Just keep a lookout for new stuff coming. I'm aiming for October. Hoodies. We're going to be doing more video content. That's going to be coming out with the Biff Bam Bort boys. And yeah, I'm excited to be on more teaming up with Long Coat Mafia. This was a fun show. I'm excited about this.
And we are out.
Goodbye.
It's shocking, humiliating, and it's unacceptable.
Oh, come on. It's a classic. The only show in the world that gets better the more it's rerun.
Do I get a choice?
No! No!
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Okay, people, move along. There's nothing to see here.